Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Sports Call Live on Tiger 95.9, SportsCallAuburn.com, and the Sports Call Podcast brought to you by Pepsi. We are now pleased to be joined by our Sports Call guest now, Ben Golliver of the Washington Post on our Auburn Bank phone line. Ben has just written a book that will be coming out May the 4th, Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. And Ben, we talked to you during the bubble last year. We're pleased to be having you back on the show now. Talk to us a little bit about this book and why it was important for you to write this book.
Well, I just think 2020 is going to go down as one of the most important years in the history of the NBA, you know, kind of right up there with, like, you know, when Magic's coming to the league in the 80s or the LeBron James era starts in 2003. You have all this stuff going on off the court with the player protests, with Kobe Bryant's death, with the, you know, the pandemic and the shutdown and everything else. And it all came together in the bubble. You know, I was there for 93 days. Up close and personal at basically all the playoff games from the second round on. I was at every single one of them. So I try to tell the entire story of the experience and put it into perspective on why, you know, that salvage attempt to make sure they could save the season will be remembered as such a key turning point for the league and obviously in the career of LeBron James for him to get a, you know, another title, his fourth ring. Obviously that was huge stakes as well. So there's a lot in it. It's my own first-person journey. And I think if anyone was watching on TV and just wanted an inside look, I think this book will provide it.
And of course, Ben, I mean, us in the sports world, we're very familiar with how we first got introduced to the virus in the sports world, and it's through the NBA. They were the first ones to have to postpone games that night with the Utah Jazz. And so it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like the NBA trying to get through that and come back to a way of playing was almost like a signal that not things are normal, because of course they're not normal, but that there's a big effort going on, that it's really important to try to get the product back on the court.
Oh, 100%. And I talk about the NBA's efforts, you know, coming after the shutdown. I do have a long interview with Rudy Gobert himself once he was in the bubble and had some time to reflect on his positive test. And, of course, all the criticism that he took for his behavior before that positive test, you know, touching the microphones and sort of making light of a virus that a lot of us didn't know a lot about, you know, back more than a year ago. So that's all part of the story, too. But there's a lot of basketball in this book as well. We had some amazing storylines, whether it was the Miami Heat kind of shocking the world, whether it was the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, kind of not living up to expectations and having the big boycott right in the middle of the playoffs, whether it was the Lakers and Anthony Davis's drive for his first ring, you know, Denver Nuggets with Jamal Murray kind of popping out of nowhere, you know, kind of being the most bubble player, right? A guy who just absolutely thrived in that environment, had all these amazing scoring explosions. You know, we get into all of it, but, you know, I do think a central theme of the book is what you're describing, the pandemic response. This is, you know, a very scary time for the country. Last summer, the NBA proved that if you had enough money and you had enough willpower, you could construct an environment where everybody could live safely. No one tested positive inside the bubble for, you know, the entire time I was there. They didn't have to cancel or postpone a single game for health reasons. And so I think it wound up being a real success story from the NBA side from a business perspective, because it wound up generating about $1 billion in television revenue. And that's no joke for a league, you know, during a pandemic where they can't have a lot of fans in the stands. So I think it's a business story. It's a basketball story. It's a health story. And it's a social justice story as well, all rolled into one.
We're talking to Ben Golliver, The Washington Post, his book coming out May the 4th. Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. And Ben's been a busy guy because he also just released this talking about Kevin Durant analysis. More talent, fewer questions. Kevin Durant's Nets are worthy title favorites. Ben, talking about these Brooklyn Nets and talking about Kevin Durant, how good he's been just in the couple games he's been back. I mean, this team has all the talent in the world. I don't know. What stops them from achieving the ultimate goal this year?
Well, I think their biggest weakness is still inside, right? You know, they've made a lot of moves with their front line. They went out and grabbed Blake Griffin. They went out and got LaMarcus Aldridge. And they've actually had a really nice breakout from their second-year center, Nicholas Claxton, who's, you know, not kind of a big name like those other guys, but he's given them really good minutes. So when you came into the season, you looked at Brooklyn and said, well, DeAndre Jordan, you know, he's kind of past his prime. Maybe, you know, he's not going to be good enough to hold up. Now they've got themselves three or four different options that they can play in the middle. But still the question is, are they going to be able to match up properly with a player like a Joel Embiid, or, you know, a front line like the Lakers with Andre Drummond and Anthony Davis and LeBron James, if those teams meet in the finals, I think those are the biggest questions. But, you know, past that, they've got everything else covered. Their offense is basically the best we've ever seen in the NBA from an explosiveness standpoint. And that's even though they've got guys coming in and out of the lineup constantly. They've got three players who are incredible isolation scorers in KD, Harden, and Kyrie Irving. Those guys have really meshed from a personality standpoint excellently. They haven't been fighting for control of the ball. There's really been no tug of war for those Brooklyn Nets. And they've got great role players, too. You know, Bruce Brown gives them awesome minutes as a glue guy. They've got an awesome shooter in Joe Harris, who's just been red hot all season long, great floor spacer. And, you know, they're even getting good minutes from veterans like Jeff Green, who just kind of pop in and give them some helpful spurts. And, you know, it's just so much easier when you're playing with very talented guys because your job gets to be a lot simpler. And that's really been the story for these Brooklyn Nets. So, you know, to me, they're the favorites coming out of the East for sure. You know, it's been some tough times here over the last couple of days, though. I mean, they got ran off the court by the Lakers. They really just didn't show up. And then they're sitting a bunch of guys for tonight's game against Philadelphia just for rest purposes. So I think it's going to be a playoffs where a lot of these teams that have dealt with injuries during the regular season are almost going to rip off the suit, and they're going to have that Superman outfit underneath. I think that's going to be the case for the Nets, the Lakers, and some other teams as well, where they've just been biding their time until we get to May when the games really count.
And Ben, speaking of the Philadelphia 76ers, they currently are tied for first in the Eastern Conference, and it just feels like they finally might have it all together as far as Joel Embiid realizing his potential as the best big man in the league, and Doc Rivers now being at the helm instead of Brett Brown. So do you think their success this season is attributed to Doc Rivers stepping in and being the coach, or is it Embiid finally realizing his potential, or is it a combination of both, or something else perhaps?
Well, I would have another explanation. I would say addition by subtraction with Al Horford. You know, it just that was the big hiccup with their lineups last year, is he just really couldn't play with Embiid. They didn't have enough spacing. The defense wasn't good enough when those two guys were on the court together to kind of make up for the offensive compromises, and they couldn't keep everybody happy. Once they took Horford out of there, Tobias Harris's role made a lot more sense. He's had a really strong season. They've been able to keep Ben Simmons healthy, which is always a big X factor as well. And I just think it was good for their vibe. You know, it just kind of gave clearer roles and clearer identities for everybody on that group. They still have some holes, though. You know, they're not a good three-point shooting team. Their offense is only average. Their defense is excellent, absolutely, and it starts with their two stars. But I do think Tobias Harris can be picked on defensively. He's a possible potential, playoff liability in that spot. And so, you know, they've had a really dream season outside of Embiid's injury. Everything has just been smooth going for them, but they still have some questions to answer. Can they keep pace offensively with Milwaukee and Brooklyn if they don't really get good three-point shooting from guys like Harris and Danny Green? To me, that's kind of the open question. That's what could hold them back. But otherwise, it's certainly a better vibe, better chemistry, better happiness, continuity, all that kind of stuff compared to last year. And it was just time for them to move on. I think the Brett Brown era ran its course. It was time for a new voice. And Doc Rivers has done a nice job there. He's probably not getting a ton of Coach of the Year mentions right now. I think guys like Quinn Snyder, Monty Williams out in the Western Conference have gotten a little bit more love just because maybe their success has been a bit more surprising. They're doing it with a little bit less name talent. But I think Doc Rivers should be in the conversation too.
Ben, when we look out west and we have the reigning champion Lakers with their two most significant players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, been out for a while, especially Anthony Davis. LeBron having really just the only second significant injury of his entire career. What is your level of concern for them? And then kind of based off of that, what do you see the chances are for the Clippers, who look a lot better this year than the Jazz, who have been surprisingly good all season long?
Well, I would say my concern level is less now that, you know, Jamal Murray went down for Denver, because, you know, they were going to be in a situation maybe where the Lakers, and it could still happen, you know, Lakers and Nuggets play in the first round 4 or 5. That matchup looks a lot better for the Lakers without Murray, because now you can just double Jokic and really, you know, aggressively defend him and kind of let their other role players try to beat you. And I don't think that they've got the point guard talent behind Murray to compensate for his absence. And so, you know, Denver was looming as a major threat to the defending champions, and I think they've really come back to earth. There's also a scenario now where, you know, the Lakers have been without LeBron and Anthony Davis. It was possible they were going to slide back into that play-in round, which would make their life much more difficult. But instead, it seems like they're going to be able to tread water. There's even a possibility they could play Portland in the first round now, 4-5, and they absolutely wiped the floor with Portland in last year's playoffs. And so that would be a much easier path to kind of start their playoff journey if they're able to get that matchup, as opposed to the alternative that we were looking at a couple weeks ago. I actually want to give Frank Vogel and, you know, guys like Schroeder, Drummond, a lot of credit for keeping this team afloat during the injuries. They've maintained an excellent defense. Last time I checked, they were number one in the league defensively, even though they've lost both their stars here for the last couple of weeks. They win some games ugly. They definitely lose some games against better competition, but they've been showing a lot of competitive spirit and heart here without their two stars. I think those guys are going to come back rested. They're going to be ready for a late season push, and they're going to be the team to beat in the Western Conference.
And speaking of the Western Conference, Ben, a team that people expected to have pretty solid growth this season was the Phoenix Suns, but nobody expected exponential growth as far as them being a game and a half out of the first seed of the Western Conference. So how impressed have you been with the Phoenix Suns this season?
Very impressed. You know, I definitely was in that camp that was more skeptical, didn't see them having this high of a ceiling, so you're right on the money there. It all goes back to Chris Paul. I mean, look what happens when he gets to places, and then look what happens when he leaves places, right? He gets to the Clippers, they have the best stretch of franchise history. He leaves, they immediately miss the playoffs. He gets to Houston, they have the best season in franchise history. He leaves, they go into a two-year collapse, and now they're one of the worst teams in the Western Conference. He goes to Oklahoma City, they're the biggest surprise of last season, gets them into the playoffs. He leaves, they immediately go into the tank, and they're going to be one of the worst teams this year. He gets to Phoenix, and immediately they have the best season that they've had in probably 15 years, right? I mean, the impact on winning remains so high from a player like Chris Paul, and I think people get caught up with the fantasy stats numbers, who has the biggest point totals and assist totals and all that, and Chris Paul's box scores don't jump off the page at you, you know, in terms of his numbers, but that guy makes everybody around him better. He knows how to execute late in games. They've been a great team in clutch situations this year, winning close games. Chris Paul is a big reason why. And he's making all their young players' lives easier. A guy like DeAndre Ayton, of course, Devin Booker, the all-star guard, but also Mikal Bridges, they've just fit so much more comfortably in what they're asked to do because Chris Paul's out there running the show. I do think that with Phoenix, they've had such great continuity and such great health this year that they might their record might overstate how good they really are. You know, I think teams like the Clippers, even the Nuggets, and then also, of course, the Lakers are going to be tougher in the playoffs than the Suns just because they've got more top-end all-star level talent. And so I think in that situation, you know, Phoenix could be a possible, you know, first-round upset pick depending on who they draw in the first round. But to me, they're a team that I don't really view them as a traditional contender. Like, you know, usually we say the two seed in the West, well, you know, they're going to be title contenders. I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far, but they've had a phenomenal season.
Ben, I'm curious, with us being in Auburn, obviously we're keeping track of Isaac Okoro and Chuma Okeke, and then certainly Sharif Cooper here coming up in this NBA draft, expected to be, I don't know, late first-round pick or so. What are your thoughts on either of those guys and what you see maybe in the future of Sharif Cooper in the NBA?
Well, I would start with Okoro. I mean, that's exactly what the Cleveland Cavaliers have needed. They need that balancing piece because their guards just want to dribble the ball and shoot the ball. That's all they want to do, right? So they made a very smart decision to bet on his upside, to bet on his physical tools, and to take kind of a longer term approach with their overall roster build. I mean, they could have gone a different direction, you know, where they were drafting. They could have taken somebody like Obi Toppin, who's a little bit older, more proven scorer. Maybe you plug him in and he gets you some numbers. And, they just went the other way with it. And I like that for them because they're just not quite there yet. In terms of Okeke, he's going to have a real opportunity right now, right? I mean, they're asking him to play big minutes because of the midseason moves. And so, we'll see from them. Now, you're probably more familiar with Sharif Cooper than I am. But I think you've got the right range. I mean, obviously, he's coming in decorated as a high school player big time, and then also that continued in the SEC as well. And so, you know, we'll have to kind of see how it shakes out. When I'm looking at this draft class, to me, there's kind of five players that are really difference makers at the top. And the whole question is how much tanking do we see to angle for those top picks? Because you've got teams like Minnesota or Houston that have just had nightmare seasons. And, they're going to be in a situation where if the lottery ping pong balls fall the wrong way, they're going to have to give up their picks to a different team. Like Minnesota would have to give up their pick to Golden State. Houston would have to give up its pick to Oklahoma City. And so they have a lot of motivation here to be as bad as possible during the regular season to make sure they keep their pick and have a chance at a guy like, an Evan Mobley or a Cade Cunningham or a Jalen Suggs, who was so awesome in the NCAA tournament. So to me, that's really where a lot of the draft intrigue falls this year.
Talking to Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, his book, Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season, coming out May 4th. We posted a link on Twitter, so you can go to Amazon and pre-order that, as I said, coming out May the 4th. Ben, let's get you out of here on this. Give us another pitch for the book, and tell us what you've got planned coming up here at the Washington Post.
Well, we're getting ready. You know, the playoff chase is kind of upon us here. We've got about, another month here, that we're kind of counting down, the games until, it really matters. And so I think that that's sort of where everybody's attention is, on these seeding battles, on the health of the star-level players. And, like you mentioned, just trying to, get into some of these contender conversations. How real is Brooklyn, which I wrote about this week? Probably take a look at Philadelphia this weekend as well. And so people can check all that stuff out at WashingtonPost.com/sports.
We appreciate the time, Ben. Good to catch up with you, and we'll hope to catch up again down the line.
All right. Sounds great, man. Take care.